This is Community Voices on 91.9 UIS. I'm co-host Randy Eccles. Today we're visiting with the 6th Illinois Poet Laureate, Mark Turcotte. Mark, thank you for joining us today. You've been in town to work on the Poetry Out Loud program, which is a very diverse program in geographic scope and in many other ways. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Springfield.
Well, thanks, Randy. I'm really glad to be here. It's fun. It's fun to be back in Springfield. I'm doing it more than ever now as Laureate. It's always interesting. It's always something different every time I come here. In this case, I was here to witness and do a little speaking, reading a couple poems of my own at the Illinois State Finals for the Poetry Out Loud project, which is a nationwide poetry recitation project that's aimed at high schoolers. There's an archive, a collection of poems that are available for students to cull and read through and get to know. And their job is to memorize a couple poems that speak to them and have some meaning to them. And they start at their school level, their city level, county level, and then different regions of the state and work their way. They started this year, I think, with some 3,000 students who were looking to get to Springfield to the finals. And last night, 14 of them arrived in the city. We had a little meet and greet. Talked to them a little bit. They had all read 2 or 3 poems apiece, and we came up with a new state champion. And I don't know if I'm at liberty to say who that is.
We'll find
but they
that
certainly,
out.
They certainly were worthy, and it was fun to see. It was fun to see it live. Recitation is a different way. We've gotten to this, you know, we had this movement in America that kind of began in a lot of ways in Chicago where people decided, let's do poetry in a new way. You know, let's make it a little less staid, a little less, you know, straight ahead. And let people be more creative, especially with their deliveries. And so street level, you know, performance poetry, hip hop, the slam poetry movement all encouraged more of a performative sort of delivery of poems. And this is kind of a little glance back at a slightly more formal way of reading older poems, perhaps in older older dialects, and you know what I mean? Older English, I guess I could call it. It's amazing how these students, you know, who are, they're high school kids now, who are reading poems that sometimes are 50 or 100 years old, and they connect with them. And they do a really great job of combining slightly performative, but still really respecting the real voice that created the words. It's a difficult task, you know, but they're really good at it. And it's amazing the poems that they found that spoke to them, written by somebody who's certainly not them.
They don't write their own poetry. They have to pick from a list.
Right, yeah. That's the major difference I should have mentioned right away. As poetry contests go, this is not about poetry that they are creating themselves. It's about poetry that's already been written, published. There's sort of a requirement for a lot of it to be not contemporary, you know. And then sometimes some of the voices, poems that are in the archive that the kids are allowed to choose from are more contemporary things, but not that contemporary, really.
Are one of your poems available to be selected?
A couple of them were at one time. They just did a big shift here recently. And I think, you know, there's several reasons why. Part of it has to do with things that are in the public domain or aren't and things like that, you know, because, you know, budgets are tight. And also we have this, you know, 250-year celebration for the Declaration of Independence. They were looking to maybe have poems that were available to students that maybe spoke to that a little bit, maybe some in some way that could, you know, speak to the long history of America. But still, there was a real diverse selection. They might add back other poems later. Who knows? You know, the more contemporary stuff. I used to, a fun aspect of being me has been every once in a while out of the blue, because people can find me at DePaul University, like an email address, a student would send me a little video of them reading one of my poems in some state, local competition where they were trying to make their way. It'd be like from Wisconsin or Montana or somewhere. And you'd just get this out of the blue. And it was just so charming and wonderful to see that even at that level, that something in my work was connecting with some high schooler in the wilds of Montana somewhere. It was a lot of fun to see.
You mentioned DePaul. I love your title at DePaul. Restate that.
Now it's a Distinguished Writer in Residence. And I think that's just kind of where you land. Like, you get so old that that's kind of all they can call you.
Distinguished is a two-meaning word,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, yeah. I'm being a little facetious there. But no, it's an honor to have that title at DePaul. I've been there for some 15 years as a full-time faculty, a contingent faculty, but still full-time faculty, which is why I have a slightly different title rather than, like, associate professor or something like that. And I love it there. I really like the kind of students that I show up in my classrooms. I never planned on being there for some, I think I'm going, finishing my 16th year. Never thought I'd be there that long. And it's my first official, like, university teaching job. I went back and got my degree really late. I went back and got an MFA in my late 40s.
Actually, never too late, right?
Yeah, right, I guess not. Although I've been kicking myself, you know, ever since. And I've been telling my students, don't wait as long as I did to find out where you needed to land. Don't waste your 20s. I spent a lot of time on the road and doing lots of things in my 20s that I can write about. But you know,
life experience is good. Yeah. Was it 15 years you're basically cruising around?
Well, I had a traveling life. I graduated from high school, spent one unsuccessful year in college immediately after that. Then just kind of was on the road, living and working in different places, you know, for 2 or 3 years here, a few months here, almost itinerant laborer kind of thing, and always working with my body. Skilled and semi-skilled, sometimes more semi-skilled than skilled labor. I've had my hand in just about everything all over the country. I hitchhiked across the country a few times. And finally, in my early 30s, I had some life adjustment stuff going on. You know, you take a look around, and for me, it was this matter of like looking at my life and thinking, how proactive have I been in my life? Or have I just been sort of like letting life happen to me? And I realized that I was kind of letting life happen to me, and people who had known me a long time and loved me and cared about me, they were fully aware of it. And they'd been trying to tell me this, that I'd just kind of been ignoring them. As a matter of fact, I had a friend, a former high school teacher who I remained really good friends with. She was constantly saying, why are you in this place? Why are you there? You should be someplace like Chicago. Because I know you love to write. You were a poet, and we all knew you as a poet. And what have you done with that thing? And it really wasn't until my kind of early 30s that I landed in Chicago. She actually was instrumental in me ending up living in the city for a few months while I remodeled her basement in her three-flat. Her Chicago three-flat, Victorian three-flat, in the Lakeview neighborhood. But it was kind of a sneaky thing she did to me to like, oh, I'll hire you to remodel my basement and then get you hooked on the local literary and poetry scene. And it worked perfectly. She was brilliant.
Well, thank goodness for that. Bung.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thanks, Suzanne. Thanks. Look where we are now, right?
You talk about teaching writing at the university level. Does it feel like folks are still drawn to poetry and to writing in general, especially in the social media era?
Weirdly, it seems to be surviving because we keep pronouncing the death of poetry and then it keeps showing up. It's never quite dead. That's been going on for a long time. I remember people talking about that in the 70s. Or what people were calling poetry at that time was not acceptable to the gatekeepers. And they were proclaiming the death of real poetry and that kind of thing. But Chicago was instrumental, you know, the slam scene out of the Green Mill Lounge, Mark Smith and all those characters who basically kind of invented a place for people who weren't in academia to have access to poetry, to write it and then to hear it. Venues all over the city. And it was a thriving, like just booming scene on any given night. You could go almost anywhere in the city, north, south, east, west, and find an open mic where you could read some poems or listen to people read poems.
My first slam was amazing to check out the folks who came up and just put themselves out there and had something to say.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like any scene. It had its high, you know, its cream and it's not so cream. But ultimately, it was vital. It was alive. It inspired me. I may have ended up in academia, but I took a route to academia that is unusual. I started late. I was lucky to be casual friends with the writer Jim Harrison for a long time. And before he passed away, I think it was in 2016, he had said to me, when I won a major kind of literary award from a foundation, he said, always remember, Turcotte, you're a working guy. Like, that's the thing that's different about you. And he said, you might be the only poet I know who could move his own furniture. You know. And that was a long time ago. I can't move my own furniture anymore, but he was right. And I was proud of that. I mean, I was proud of the road I'd taken, even though it wasn't very productive. And there was some resistance in academia to people like me until the performance and street scene sort of a poetry and slam scene of poetry became more accepted in academia and other places. And frankly, DePaul hired me and gave me a tremendous welcome. And I can't think of too many universities that would have done that for me, the route that I'd taken. I just tacked a little MFA on at the end of it there. They've let me be me there. I think they appreciate me, and I've certainly appreciated them. When I hear other people talk about the English department and where they teach, I wonder if I would have thrived there or not, you know, but I feel like I've thrived at Hull.
The fortune to finding the right spot at the right time. Yeah. You mentioning the working aspect, and it reminds me of Studs Terkel and how he really, you know, brought that up in a different way, not so much poetry, but in the interviews he did with just what some folks would call regular people, or just not necessarily the high mighty CEOs of the world. You didn't grow up in Springfield or in Illinois.
No. I started out, I should have mentioned this earlier, I guess. I am proud to say I'm an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Anishinaabe Ojibwe people from Turtle Mountain, Chippewa Reservation in North Dakota, kind of like 5 miles off the Canadian border. I spent my early growing up there and then later, and also while there, also in the migrant camps of the Western U.S., we did a lot of that work out there. And then later, after my mother decided to take me and my sister off the reservation, we went back to Michigan, where she was from. So I spent like the second half of my growing up in and around lower central Michigan, you know, in Lansing and other small towns around Lansing. But I came to Illinois, like I said, when my former high school teacher tricked me into staying, and that was in the early, it was like the winter of 92, 93. And literally, I hit the ground running. I arrived in the winter of 92, 93, and in June of 1993, I stood on a stage in front of an audience, including Gwendolyn Brooks, and read a poem for which I was awarded the first ever Gwendolyn Brooks Open Mic Poetry Award, the very first one of those. And she walked up to me on the stage and handed me a little letter-sized envelope that had five $100 bills in it. That was just an amazing moment for me when I had been doing a lot of heavy labor up to that point. And I still was, actually, in Chicago. I was sheetrocking and stuff and doing construction work by day and hitting the poetry venues by night.
John Prine comes to mind, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know, John Prine's an honorary poet laureate. He was made an honorary poet laureate by the Pritzkers, who were very much involved in, especially M.K. Pritzker, in reviving the position of poet laureate, which had been kind of, hadn't been paid a real good attention to. There's a writer, a poet named Kevin Stein, who kind of saved it, like, you know, after Gwendolyn Brooks died. It floundered for a couple of years. Nobody kind of remembered how to even choose a poet laureate. And Stein, I think, was in the area, maybe Normal or maybe here in Springfield, and said, I would like to do that. Basically kept it alive for several years in a very thankless kind of manner. And then when the Pritzkers came in the office, M.K. got interested, I think, in what happened to this amazing legacy. You know, we had Carl Sandburg and Gwendolyn Brooks. Geez, how could you let that just fade away? She was instrumental in getting the Illinois Arts Council and Illinois Humanities together to come up with a procedure for selecting, you know, just vetting and then selecting a laureate.
What does that mean as you become this? I mean, you're the sixth.
What's amazing is that the first laureate was in the 1930s, so they were lifetime appointments. And Gwendolyn was laureate for 32 years. She passed in 2000, and then Kevin took over, I think, in 2003 till 2017. Then they came up with a way to, you know, like vet and actually select a laureate, and they chose Angela Jackson, the amazing Angela Jackson. And they gave her, I think, a 4-year term, and then now I'm the sixth. She's the fifth, I'm the sixth, got a 4-year term. Essentially, what does it mean? I mean, I've had a lot of people, one of the things I've learned is people don't know what a laureate is, let alone a poet laureate or whatever. Basically, it's someone who community decides they deserve some laurels, and that means some recognition and some honoring. And then you end up becoming sort of a symbol or a figurehead for, in this case, promoting poetry across the state. Well, it's kind of like a poetry ambassador. I had a student who, of course, why wouldn't they? They would say, so does that mean you're like the best poet? And no, it doesn't. It's meant that for other poets who are laureate, but certainly that's not what we mean now. It basically means that there's enough people who are interested in the arts and poetry and literature in the state who all decided, let's let this guy do it for a while. It's an honor that you're being recognized, you know, by, you know, your peers in a way. You know, it's tremendous.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here today on Community Voices, Mark Turcotte, the sixth Illinois Poet Laureate. When you think of, if you're talking to a real young kid or parents who have young kids, what can the role of poetry be in their lives? Because I think we do a lot of writing, but not necessarily much focus on poetry.
Mm-hmm. Rightly so, because of the way poetry has often been presented to people. Your average American, like my generation of young Americans, we were strictly offered the Dead Poets, that kind of thing. And they were often not even Americans. You know, they were from Europe and places. And there were a few, thankfully, that were American voices, like Whitman and later Frost and Sandburg and Brooks and people like that. It just had this air of being from another time and place. And nobody could really, even if you could understand it, it still wasn't in a language or a voice that you recognized. They weren't writing about stuff that you recognized. So it was hard to connect to. And rightly, I also remember my teachers being scared to death of poetry, almost saying out loud, like, okay, we got to do some poetry in this class, but we're going to...
Time to rhyme.
Close our eyes. Yeah, right. You know, close our eyes and rhyme, you know, make bad rhymes. But I was lucky that I went to a small, not rural necessarily, but small town high school, junior high and high school, where the teachers had the luxury of paying attention to you and recognizing you and getting to know you a little bit. So I had teachers who right away sort of recognized that quality that I had and made me feel special and made me feel seen for it. If you can throw a football or shoot a basket or run track or something, a community is real ready to, like, give you laurels, right, for that, but rarely for arts.
We'll return with more of Mark Turcotte, the 6th Illinois Poet Laureate, after this on Community Voices. This is Community Voices on 91.9 UIS. We continue our conversation with the 6th Illinois Poet Laureate, Mark Turcotte. Mark is currently up at DePaul University in Chicago, but was down in Springfield to be a special guest of the Poetry Out Loud State Championship competition. They had the regionals here, they've had the state. Now students move on to the national competition. Here's Mark Turcotte.
Well, I was lucky that on an individual basis, I had teachers who did that for me. And I seemed to hear that story over and over and over again just during the contest. These young people who were from all over the state of Illinois, as I talked to them casually, they all had a teacher with them who, you know, was their inspiration and their support, and as well as family came too for this event. So that's essential to it. But it's still almost happening at the individual level, almost. Like, some, you know, people recognize that some student has a love of reading. And so they say, you know, there's other things to read besides this stuff. There's stuff that's not on screens, and it's in dusty little books, and it's short, and it's in a language that might not be familiar, but you might like it, you know, and a variety, you know, a diverse number of voices out there that are available. And it just, it has a way of speaking, at least to individuals. Only a certain number of people become plumbers. Why shouldn't only a certain number of people become poets? You know what I mean? That kind of thing. In a weird way, with the propensity of so many voices that are out there that aren't uplifting, that aren't elevated, there's no elegance to them, there's no beauty to them. The language is kind of plain and almost mean and purposely mind-numbing. I think poetry stands out even more in contrast to that stuff. One of the young person who was just declared the new statewide champion, and will get to go to Washington, D.C., I think in late April, for the national competition. Their story was that they kind of weren't that interested in school at all until they stumbled into poetry. And now it's like it's given them, you know, this thing to focus on. But I have students who sit in front of me all the time and like, oh, I know I signed up for a poetry class. Are you really going to make me read poetry? And I'm like, well, what did you think you were going to do in this class? I'm also going to make you write poetry. And often those students who are trying to kill an English credit or something, in a way, they become sort of like the most interesting young writers in the room because it's brand new to them. And everything is just has all these possibilities to it. And they'll often say, like, I had no idea that I could be kind of like a poet, or I could speak in this kind of language. And I'm like, well, how often did people give you that chance?
They don't have tryouts usually for
right,
the poetry
right, yeah,
team, right?
Right, yeah, right, yeah.
Once in a while there's a poetry club or something.
Yeah, there
school,
are.
But what would you recommend for somebody of any age who wanted to start working on poetry?
I would say start as, you know, you should, like reading poetry. And also, if one of the things I think is a big deep secret that we keep is that children start out speaking poetry. Just the language as they're trying to learn it and find their own voices. I mean, that's the poetic process. And often, the most beautiful and interesting things they say, we record them and we show them to everybody, but then we later discourage them from speaking that way. The creativity that they're adding to their learning how to speak kind of gets subdued a little bit. But you got to be careful of that. In general, it's a bad idea to quell the imaginations of our children. And whether it's in language or art or just running the way they want to run across the lawn, you know, or the yard, how they want to look at a tree. Kind of let them learn how to look at a tree the way they want to look at a tree, right? Or speak about looking at a tree the way they want to speak about looking at a tree. You know, and maybe it'll become a poem. Who knows?
You obviously enjoy and have had a life fulfillment from writing poetry. Do you like to recite your poetry?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Would you have one that you know that you wouldn't mind sharing with us?
Sure. How about, since it's fresh in my mind right now, this is kind of like the poem that a lot of people know me for. It was once one of the poems that was available for the Out Loud project, which it no longer is, because they've done that shifting of available poems. But it's called Flies Buzzing. It's basically about me looking back at like how I came to poetry in a weird way, you know, being a kid on the reservation. And I remember looking out of the window, out of the wooden log house, and looking out into the night and swearing that I saw things in the trees that other people didn't see. But it was all blended in with just the life that I was living every day among my people. But it's called Flies Buzzing. As a child, I danced to the heartful, savage rhythms of the native, the American Indian, in the Turtle Mountains, in the Round Hall, in the greasy light of kerosene lamps. As a child, I danced among the long, jangle legs of the men, down beside the whispering moccasin women, in close circles, around the old ones who sat at the drum, their heads tossed, backs arched in ancient prayer. As a child, I danced away from the fist. I danced toward the rhythms of life. I danced into dreams, into the sound of flies buzzing, a deer advancing but clinging to the forest wall, the old red woman rocking in her tattered shawl, the young women bent, breasts drooping to the mouths of their young, and the heat hanging heavy on the tips of our tongues, until the sun burned the sky black, the moon made us all silvery blue, and all of the night sounds folded together with the buzzing still in our heads, becoming a chant of ghosts, of Crazy Horse and Wovoka, and all the endless others, snaking through the weaving through the trees like beams of ribbons of light, singing, we shall live again, we shall live, until the sun and the sun and the sun and I awaken, still a child, still dancing toward the rhythms of life.
Thank you for that.
Sure, thank you.
This is Community Voices, Mark Turcotte, the 6th Illinois Poet Laureate. Thank you for joining us today. Anything you'd like to leave us with about poetry or Poetry Out Loud?
Google, look up Poetry Out Loud. Look at the Poetry Foundation's website if you want to find poems. Before you start dabbling into buying books of poems and stuff, you can find poems by individuals at the Poetry Foundation website. And also links through Illinois Arts Council to a variety of other statewide poetry contests that are aimed at young people. There's the Gwendolyn Brooks Youth Poetry Awards, which results in a chapbook of the winners from different grade levels, you know, beginning with elementary school grade all the way through high school. That's been an ongoing thing. Gwendolyn started that back in the day, and we got revived recently with the help of her daughter, Nora Brooks Blakely. And there's the Emerging Poets Awards, which also has a Gwendolyn Brooks name attached to it, which is for adult poets who don't have books out and stuff like that. They're emerging writers. And there's a lot of stuff out there that I didn't even know about until I became laureate. And I'm supposed to be immersed kind of in the scene a little bit. So do some looking around. There's a lot of stuff, especially at the community level. One of the things I'm learning is that there are poetry organizations and clubs all over this state. And I'm getting a chance to talk to them and hang out with them. And you just realize, like, poetry is happening at every level. It's happening in academia, it's happening in bars, it's happening in clubs, it's happening, you know, in libraries, it's happening in like little art galleries and stuff all over the state where people are, you know, gathering together and sharing.
How would you compare a lyricist with music to a poet?
Ooh, that's a dangerous question.
I know.
I mean, the difference is that you can write a kind of poetry that is enhanced and elevated by music that makes it way more interesting than if you just tried to read it on the page. Some of my favorite musicians and their music, I just love it when I'm singing it in a car with them, but when I try to read it on the page, I kind of go like, oi, too much telling, not enough showing in this. I mean, that's the primary way that they're different. A poem has to stand up on the page and out loud with people too, which is a new way of looking at poetry, I think, where the lyrics don't necessarily have to stand up by themselves. They're enhanced. They're written in a way that allows them to be enhanced by the music.
Makes sense.
But there are a lot of singers, musicians who write their own lyrics, and their lyrics do stand up by themselves too. You know, there's a lot of poets that are.
Oh, you mentioned John Prine earlier.
Oh,
right?
Sure. So, yeah, you can. Yes, yeah. How can you not? Right.
It comes to mind. Just recently, we lost Jesse Jackson, and he had a way of speaking when he did his speeches that had a pentameter to it, you know, and just poetic in a sense.
Yeah, and a performative value.
Right.
I mean, just that simple phrase of his, I am somebody, saying that the way he said it made all the difference. Yeah. And you cannot deny the poetry in that phrase and 90% of everything else that he said over time.
Well, Mark Turcotte, thank you so much for making your way to the studios today and participating in the Poetry Out Loud State Finals here in Illinois. Illinois 6th Poet Laureate, great to have you on Community Voices today.
Thanks, Randy. I was glad to be here.
From the 2024 Illinois Poetry Out Loud State Contest, Johanna and Shaw, You, If No One Else, by Tina Villanueva.
Listen, you who transformed your anguish into healthy awareness, put your voice where your memory is. You who swallowed the afternoon dust, defend everything you understand with words. You. If no one else will condemn with your tongue the erosion each disappointment brings. You, who saw the images of disgust growing, will understand how time devours the destitute. You, who gave yourself your own commandments, know better than anyone why you turned your back on your town's toughest limits. Don't hush. Don't throw away the most persistent truth, as our hard-headed brethren sometimes do. Remember well what your life was like. Cloudiness, slick mud after a drizzle, flimsy windows the wind kept rattling in winter, and that unheated slab dwelling where coldness crawled up in your clothes. Tell how you were able to come to this point, to unbar history's doors, to see your early years, your people, the others. Name the way rebellion's calm spirit has served you, and how you came to unlearn the lessons of that teacher. Your land's omnipotent defiler. Remember how, from the first emptiness, you, started saving yourself. And ask yourself what, after all, these words are good for in this round hour now, where your voice strikes time.
Again, from the 2024 Illinois Poetry Out Loud State Contest, Johanna Enshaw, Once the World Was Perfect, by Joy Harjo.
Once the world was perfect, and we were happy in that world. Then we took it for granted. Discontent began a small rumble in the earthly mind. Then doubt pushed through with its spiked head, and once doubt ruptured the web, all manner of demon thoughts jumped through. We destroyed the world we had been given for inspiration, for life. Each stone of jealousy, each stone of fear, greed, envy, and hatred put out the light. No one was without a stone in his or her hand. There we were, right back where we had started. We were bumping into each other in the dark, and now we had no place to live, since we didn't know how to live with each other. Then, one of the stumbling ones took pity on another and shared a blanket. A spark of kindness made a light. The light made an opening in the darkness. Everyone worked together to make a ladder. A WindClan person climbed out first into the next world. Then the other clans, the children of those clans, their children and their children, all the way through time to now, into this morning light, to you.
Again, from the Illinois Poetry Out Loud State Contest, Johanna Enshaw, Once the World Was Perfect, by Joy Harjo.